This episode of Word for Word may contain language or themes that are not suitable for all listeners. If you're experiencing difficulty, please reach out for support. You can reach QLife, an anonymous and free LGBTI support service, by calling 1-800-184-527 or call Lifeline 24 hours a day on 131114 for crisis support and suicide prevention. In an emergency, please call 000.
Australia on the Community Radio Network to over 70 community stations around the nation. This is Word for Word, hosted by Lisa Dano Daniel, coming to you from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy.
Hi, welcome to Word for Word. I'm your host, Lisa Dano Daniel. Today's guest has crammed an awful lot into their life so far. They've been a councillor, a former mayor of the city of Hobsons Bay in Melbourne, as well as a long-time public speaker, educator, passionate human rights advocate and animal lover. On top of that, they have also been a proud parent of an adult son. Welcome to Word for Word, Tony Briffa.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here. Wow, where did you get all that?
Off your own website, actually. Oh, okay. There, yeah. So that's where I get most of my stuff from, okay. From people's websites. Usually I start when I speak to people for this show. I go through their background and their childhood and their growing up and that sort of stuff. I think we need to start with the obvious thing. What is meant by the term intersex?
Okay, so yes, I'm an intersex person. So what that means is biologically, when I was born, I'm not exclusively male or female. So I'm outside the typical norms of what it means to be male or female. So in my case, I'm a twin. I'm the younger of twins, and when I was born, doctors weren't completely certain what I was. I was assigned as female, and which was fine, but they also realised that that I probably have two internal testes. So they felt that I had lumps down there, and so I was referred to the Royal Children's Hospital for further investigation as to what they were. And they found that, yes, I do have, even though externally I look female, on the inside I had testes.
So there was enough there externally for them to say, oh, what's this? What are these little lumps here? Let's go and check these out. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's right. That's in my case. But there's lots of different intersex variations.
So some would be more externally obvious than others?
Some, but most intersex people, you wouldn't tell by looking at their genitals if they're intersex. So the atypical genitalia is probably about a quarter of all intersex people. Most intersex people have just typical genitals.
What's the birth rate in terms of intersex statistics?
So it's about 1.7 to 2 people, so to 2 in percent. Out of 100 people, about 2 people would be intersex.
Yeah, it's a significant number. Really.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, it's not out of tens of thousands.
Oh, exactly right. So people would have met other intersex people for sure, but a lot of intersex people don't know that they're intersex. And even if they do, they're not very out about it because there's a lot of stigma and shame and secrecy attached to being intersex.
Why do you think that is? What is the main thing that we fear about intersex variation?
Well, firstly, once you're out as an intersex person, there's a lot of questions about, well, are you really male? Are you female? What are you? And often you're othered. You're basically treated like you're not really a male and you're not really a female. You're something else altogether, which is not a nice place to be. There's a lot of conflation with trans as well. And look, I'm not trans, but a lot of people think that I'm obviously trans, judging by the amount of emails that I get about trans issues from people. There's also conflation about being gay or lesbian, which I don't really mind too much, I guess, because that suits me very well. Yeah, and there's also the idea that people have that being intersex means that you have complete sets of male and female genitals, which is just completely not the case.
Would that be the old term hermaphrodite?
That's correct.
What that referred to?
That's right.
What are the common misconceptions? Well, you've pretty much just said that, haven't you?
Yeah.
So really it's about external genitalia and people thinking that you've got several bits and pieces that you...
That's exactly
that other people
right.
have that
I
you mean, shouldn't
I,
have.
I remember being with a... Well, it was a very short short thing with someone, but, getting into the whole swing of things physically and them saying, oh, is that what it looks like? I mean, it's just normal. Talk about a mood killer. But, yeah, it's, Most intersex people wouldn't look anything different to any other male or female.
What's on your birth certificate?
At the moment?
Yeah, at the moment, because I know it has changed.
Yeah, I say at the moment. We'll so my first birth certificate said female. I've had a birth certificate that said male as well at some stage. So when I was 30, I then had a birth certificate that said blank, that I was nothing. So it just had blank. And my birth certificate now says female, so it reverted back to the original birth certificate.
When you had those birth certificates, did your passport reflect those changes?
They did along the way, yes. So I have travelled and used a passport as female, male, blank. My Australian passport is X. My Maltese passport has U, which my lovely wife tells me means that I'm a unicorn.
What does that mean?
I rang the Consul General to ask him.
Unusual.
I'm like, what does this mean? And he said, well, it means undetermined. I'm like, oh, okay. So he was very apologetic about that and, you know, said that, oh, he'll try and go and fix it and whatever. And I waited for my wife to come home, and Manya came home and I showed it to her, and my wife, being my wife, started laughing. And I'm like, you know, I was pretty serious and, you know, almost devastated about this damn passport. And she's laughing. And I'm like, what are you laughing at? And she just says, you're a unicorn. And I'm like, I love it. So I've kept it as a unicorn.
You've kept your sense of humour too along the way, haven't you?
I don't know where I'd be without it.
Really?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's pretty tough, you know, being, you know, it's tough enough being queer, but then when you're that different, it's challenging.
What's the current situation for a child born with an intersex variation? Is it different in states, across
it
states?
It actually is, because it depends on hospitals.
How would you like to be perceived?
God, I'd like people to see me as a person or whatever, someone with maybe a sense of humour and a bit of intellect, and is a nice person. The whole male and female thing is a challenge. It's, I know how I look now because I did take testosterone for a few years. You know, I was confused. There was a born biologically a mixture, and society doesn't accept people that are different. I've been lied to by doctors for as long as I can remember. And doctors tried to convince me so much that I was a female, so much so that I just didn't believe them. Trying to convince me I'm more female than other females because my body doesn't respond to androgens the way that normal females do. When I say to the doctors, you know, well, how can that work, given that I don't have ovaries and a uterus, I can't have children, I've never had a period, but yet you're expecting me to believe that I'm more female than normal females. Like, it does not add up.
So given your age, just give me a decade.
So I am, yeah, that's right. So I'm 50 next year. So I was born in 1970. Don't tell Wikipedia, because it's currently got that I was born in 1971.
Oh, yeah, it does too. I had a look today.
Oh, did you? Okay, yes. 1971. So it's been like that for years. I don't know who did it, but I love them.
Do you want to talk about David Rund?
Yeah, so
bit?
David's...
I read that amazing book.
Yeah, David's also a twin, David Reimer and his brother Bruce. Identical twins, non-intersex. They go in for a circumcision. Unfortunately, in that process, and they use an electric, I don't know what they were thinking, but electric scalpel, basically, and in the process completely burnt off his penis.
They cauterise it.
Cauterise it, yeah. So they saw Dr. Money.
John Money.
At the Baltimore, what was it
Hopkins?
Called? John Hopkins, that's right. And they decided that, well, the easiest thing to do would be to raise him as a girl. He won't know anything about it. Make sure he's in a pink room. He's given dolls. But that's not where it ended. They also subjected him to lots of, frankly, God, I'm going to characterise it as sexual abuse within the clinical setting, just as I was. Ultimately, he found out, because he didn't accept that, he was female, as a teenager, converted to back to living as male, and found out about what happened. His brother, given all the trauma that they had gone through, particularly as children at John Hopkins, his brother committed suicide. David couldn't handle it anymore, and then he also took his life.
Mm. It's one of those really famous, for anyone who's studied psychology, it comes up a lot in terms of that nature-nurture. And the thoughts of John Money at the time was that you could just make a child into the gender by socialising it, which clearly doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work.
Do you think it's a mixture of both, upbringing and biology?
And I do.
Because that puts you in a really fascinating position, doesn't it?
I don't really understand the whole gender thing, to be perfectly honest, because most people like me, just, you know, your body is whatever and you just assume, you know, you feel that way. So for me, it's more like, well, I accept that biologically, you know, I am part male and part female and mainly female. And that's okay, you know. I wish it was described to me in that way and it was just accepted when I was a child. So all that confusion, the mistreatment, the abuse that I copped at the Royal Children's Hospital here in Melbourne, it did make me very confused. So when I was 30, I did take testosterone for a few years. And I changed my name from Antoinette to Anthony and did all that sort of stuff.
I think that's when I met you, actually.
Yeah.
I think you were living as a male, a gay male.
It was interesting because I'll call them two husbands. So I was officially married to one of them and was in a long-term relationship with a man, but he's not gay. It was difficult because, you know, I was going through and exploring, trying to work out who I am, and I'm in a relationship with a straight guy and... You know, it was difficult for him. We were still very good friends.
Let's go back to your childhood. I know we've sort of touched on it a little bit. Do you know what your parents were told when you were born?
My parents, keeping in mind, you know, they're migrants from Malta, they pretty much believe the doctors and what doctors tell them. You know, doctors know this stuff and they never hear of intersex. So when I was born, went to the Royal Children's Hospital, doctors told them that, well, you've got a girl, but she's different. And we can fix her, we can get rid of the male bits and whatever, and she'll grow up as a girl and won't know anything different. So she'd just be happy as a girl and that's it.
And what parents would really question that?
They wouldn't. Perhaps, they wouldn't. So even now, in Victoria, the government introduced legislation not that many years ago to stop vets from docking tails of dogs. So dogs have more rights to physical integrity than intersex kids. If you want a tattoo in Victoria, you need to be an adult. You can't do female genital mutilation in Victoria, thankfully. So there's all these other people that are protected. Even trans kids are protected in the sense that they cannot have, you know, surgeries done to them without, you know, without their consent. They have to be a certain age and all that sort of stuff.
Just seems bizarre that it's based on, you know, really old thinking in terms of, you know, really, last century and the century before in terms of the medical
really
system.
Old thinking.
You know, I'm not educated on this stuff, but it just strikes me as a very
really old thinking.
Ancient thing
and it's not just
surgeries,
it's also hormone treatment.
So after your parents have been told this is going to happen, you had a surgery as an infant?
Oh, I had lots of surgeries as an infant.
So did they have to keep... So once they'd removed your...
Well, they didn't remove my testes till I was seven. So they kept doing surgeries, you know, cut me open to see what I have, what I don't have.
So there's no medical reason for that either? It was just exploratory thing for them?
Yeah, medical exploratory. At the time, I can understand why they would do laparotomies and you know, explore what I have and what I don't have. And not to mention the repeated examinations every 3 months at the Royal Children's Hospital by doctors touching you in what my mother, I love my mum, hi mum, what she called my privates, which I never understood why they were so private, because they weren't private. My privates. And it'll be the doctor, it'll be a number of other doctors, the student doctors, poking and prodding and putting things inside. I mean, it was institutionalised. Child abuse, rapes, like it was disgusting and it was so repeated and I was just treated like a piece of crap.
How many surgeries do you think you had related to your intersex variation?
Yeah, probably by the time I was 16 was the last one, 8 or 9, in addition to being put on, you know, hormones when I was 11.
And on top of that, the regular
medical examinations.
Yeah, so how did this fit with your notion of what other kids were doing? Did you assume that this was...
So I'm a twin. So
yeah,
my twin sister...
Your sister wasn't going...
She wasn't... She'd be in the waiting room, so she didn't have to go through all of this. I'd be in the waiting room with other kids that had really serious medical conditions, that had cancer, that had, you know, life-threatening issues. And as a kid, I'm thinking, well, if they're here, I'm here, we're seeing doctors, like... We must be the same, and I don't know what's going on, but it must be pretty bad. And I'm seeing my mother in particular cry, all the secrecy that, you know, so things are being said that I can't hear and, you know, keep being kept from me. So I didn't know. I remember the night before I was castrated, and that night I'm thinking, well, this might be my last night, I might not see my my parents.
Did they explain what they were doing to you, or was this a routine?
They did surgery. Now, I was seven. They told me that my parents told me that they were removing tissues. I'm like, I don't remember swallowing Kleenex, so I had no idea what they were doing to me. That the night I was castrated, I was in bed. I wanted to go to the bathroom. I got out of bed and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sore. Like, but I managed to get out of bed. I managed to take a few steps into the hallway and I could not walk anymore. And I'm just calling out, like crouched over in lots of pain, calling out for the nurses. I'm like, nurse, nurse. Then they saw me and they're like, oh, Antoinette, what are you doing? What do you do? You have to stay in bed.
Did your parents try to explain or they just, you know?
My parents had to go along with what the doctors were telling them. But, you know, so they did the very best that they could for me. I mean, even to an extent, I have to say the doctors were doing what they thought they were right for me as well. That was in the 70s. To be doing that same stuff now is obscene. Back then, yes, I can understand they thought they were doing the right thing by me, but to be doing it to kids now, not acceptable. They know what they're doing and they shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, with all the research that's available now, and what we know now, like I get what you're saying about, you know, in the 70s, 40s or whatever, you know, we didn't quite have that knowledge, but science is ever evolving.
Last time I checked, above all, do no harm. The status quo should be don't do any interventions until you've got absolute medical proof that you need to do them. And in fact, what you should be doing is getting some independent arbiter to decide if you want to do surgeries and they're not medically required and they're irreversible, then you should be going to an internal arbiter to get approval to do those surgeries.
And would you advocate that that would be at a later age when the child, teenager, young adult, whatever, could have the knowledge?
Yeah, absolutely. So, but they could be 12 even. They could be, as long as, you know, they can provide consent, they know what they're doing, that's fine. But I have to say, you know, when I was 16, I almost gave consent to doctors doing surgery to reduce the size of my clitoris, because when you're a teenager, you know, teenage girl, you want to fit in. You want to be like
a change room at school is horrific any teenager.
It's funny you mentioned change rooms. Had I not had any of those surgeries that doctors did to me as a child, I wouldn't have had a problem in any of the change rooms. But because I did, I had scars. They were pretty obvious on my groin and all, like. I avoided them at all costs. So I avoided school camps, I avoided swimming lessons, and if I was forced to go, I'd be the first one out of the pool or whatever to be the first one to get that one cubicle in the girls' changing rooms, so I didn't have to show what I looked like.
It's a lot of pressure on a young mind.
Yeah, I have to say, it was a pretty lonely existence.
When did you realise that it was related to your... Well, your genitals, really. When did you realise it was an intersex issue, not, you know, some mysterious tissues or...
I always knew it was about my... I could not know it's about my genitals because they're always so fascinated by them. I mean, they are pretty amazing. well, you know, most talked about genitals in the country, I think.
Am I right in assuming, because you've had so many people prodding them and looking at them, medical people I'm talking about, not being facetious, that there would have been at some stage people studying or taking photos?
Oh, it's disgusting.
And even
as a 30-year-old, when I decided that, you know, like, I'm just going to try testosterone to see what, you know, what I would have been like, you know, had they not castrated me. And that's what it was all about. It wasn't because I wanted to transition to a man or anything. It was because I wanted to see what nature had made me. The doctors asked to take photos, like medical photography. I mean, I ended up being quite physical. I should technically say here that I had a medical scuffle over medical records in a room with a doctor, but you know what? I'll just say it as it is. I locked my endocrinologist up in his room, in his consulting room with me in it, and I did not let him... Well, I did get physical with him because I wanted my medical records and didn't want him to continue to abuse me the way that he did.
What access did you have before that to your medical records? What age do you have to be to...
18. And medical records, Royal Children's Hospital, fantastic. I had no problems in getting access to my medical records.
Have you ever had anyone from the medical profession maybe apologise or acknowledge that...
You know, an apology if you're going to continue doing that mistreatment, then the apology doesn't mean anything. I'd love to see an apology one day, but I'd like to, and I'd love to stand shoulder to shoulder with the RCH when that apology is given, and I'd love to say that, you know, yes, we're working together, and that the treatment practices of the you know, days gone by have changed now, and. But yeah, I mean, I wish that was happening.
What countries are making strides in the right direction?
Well, I'm very pleased to say Malta is one of them.
Interesting, Catholic.
Yeah, very Catholic
culture.
Very Catholic culture.
Quite religious, yes.
Very religious. When you look at, I mean, people couldn't even get divorced in Malta until, you know, as recent as, I think it's about less than 10 years ago.
Do they have equal marriage yet?
They do.
Thought so.
Yeah,
it's a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that's right. So we do. So I'm a dual citizen, and other countries are slowly getting there. We're doing a lot of work with the UN. So we're getting there slowly.
When did you find out there was others like yourself?
When I was about 15. The AIS Support Group Australia is the oldest intersex group anywhere in the world, and it was formed at the Royal Children's Hospital by the doctor that treated me as a teenager. So he invited me to a meeting of intersex people, well, intersex girls, in March, I think it was March 1986. So it was formed
in
85.
Why was it girls in particular?
Because it was girls with AIS, and I hate to say it, but they were pretty, they were very careful about who to invite. It was just girls that was going to be going to push that whole typical line of, you know, you're a girl with AIS.
So you've met a whole variety of people from a whole variety of diverse backgrounds and
it's
cultures,
been awesome. I mean,
classes.
I met with Intersex Russia a few weeks ago in Moscow. That was awesome. Yeah, I've met intersex people all over the world and pretty amazing.
It's probably a really hard question to answer for you because you don't know any other way, but how do you think being intersex and being the poster person for intersex, particularly in Australia, well, probably around the world actually, how has that affected your life and the choices you've made around career, friendships,
yep,
partnerships?
Yep.
All of those things.
It's one of those funny things. I think, you know, if I want to think, what would my life be if I didn't have an intersex variation?
Feel boring like the rest of us.
And I think, I mean, Maltese, married kids, you know, just...
Well, you did try that, you know, though, didn't you?
So you were
married?
I did try that, yeah. So I was married to... My first marriage, I was 19 when I married him. Obviously, I couldn't have children, but I did foster children.
And he knew of your variation?
Well, the first marriage didn't last very long at all, so I didn't foster children with him. But he knew about my... He more than knew about my variation. I gave him my medical records, and I couldn't accept it. I'm thinking, how can someone else accept it? But I gave him my medical records. He accepted it, but we were married for less than 3 years. My second husband, he knew all about it, and he was very accepting of it, and we did foster children and raise children together.
How many kids?
Two of them we raised together, foster children, but we had other foster children for respite.
And you were in touch with any of those kids?
With one in particular. So, Chris. So, yeah, he's my son and I love him very much and I'm very proud of Chris. So, yeah.
Is he part of your family?
Oh, he's my son. He's definitely part of my family.
Yep.
And
amazing. So he's supportive of you?
Yeah. Never forget. He would have been all of, let me think, it would have been the 2001 election. So he was 9 years old. 2001 election, I'm standing as a candidate. We go out shopping and we're at a local shopping centre and he's getting shoes for a wedding. My brother got married on election day. Thanks, Luke. And so we're getting shoes for the wedding and he's campaigning for me. He's like saying to the shop assistant, who are you voting for at the election? And I'm like, Chris, you never ask. He's 9 years old. But, you know, he's very supportive. He's lovely. So he goes to lots of, you know, over the years, been to lots of council things. Definitely there when I became mayor and all that sort of thing and helped out election time.
So you've touched on something I really want to tease out from you. So you've really contributed, obviously, to the intersex, you know, the not-for-profit industry of that, yeah, and helping so many people that are born with intersex variations. You've been doing it for, what, let's say 25 years?
A long time, yeah.
A long time,
yeah.
Most of your adult life.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've also done a lot of stuff with local council. You've been the mayor of the city of Hobsons Bay.
Yep.
Where do you get this sense of social justice from? Why do you not want to just sit quietly in the background?
Well, I'm going to say this, and this is going to sound pretty weird maybe, but I actually do think I get it from my Catholic upbringing and particularly the Josephite nuns. They're awesome. Absolutely love.
Is that the sort of school you went to?
That's right. Yeah, they were pretty awesome. They did, you know, instill a lot of virtues and virtue and courage was our motto. And
how would they have dealt with an intersex child if that was something that was public?
They've been awesome. I mean, they even sent me a beautiful card when I became mayor. I had a lovely afternoon tea after that at the council chambers. They've always been so supportive of me, irrespective of being, you know, out as a lesbian, out as an intersex person, out as whatever. They've been fantastic. And even when I got married, I got a card, you know, just like, congratulations on our marriage, you know. And the Josephite nuns in particular are just amazing. So I am very lucky that I went to Mount St. Joseph's Girls College in Altona, had the wonderful nuns that I had as teachers. I'm getting emotional thinking about it.
Because I ask that question to a lot of people, because a lot of people I speak to on here have got amazing social justice contributions behind them, and that's the first time anyone's ever said Josephite nuns.
There you go.
I've got to say. They often say their parent or an uncle or often a teacher. So I suppose in some ways nuns
were mentors and teachers to you. They were awesome. Look, they were fantastic. And I'm really glad that I'm still in touch with those that are still alive. And I've been to a few funerals, unfortunately, over the years. But, yeah, they were great. I mean, they even turned up, you know, to my kids were baptised, my foster children, and, you know, they came to the baptism. And
putting yourself out there as the poster person for intersex is a massive thing. Like, it's putting yourself out there in a way that none of the rest of us have to do. We, you know, we're flawed humans, we make mistakes, and we might admit them, but yours isn't a mistake. It's a mistake of the medical profession as to how they dealt with it. It's a very intimate part of your life. Oh, in some ways defines you, in some way doesn't. Yeah. But a lot of people just not want that out there.
The 2001 election, so federal election campaign, I was 31 years old and I'm being asked by newspapers what my genitals look like during a federal election campaign. I'm a candidate. And I'm just, really? And so I basically told them to go ask John Howard and Kim Beazley what their genitals look like and come back to me when they've got answers. It was full on. And then I ended up in, you know, all sorts of websites for weirdos.com and, you know, The Age writing articles about me that I don't know whether I'm Arthur or Martha and, you know, all these horrible things.
A lot of us just crawl in a hole and say, you know what, I don't want to be this person.
Except that I want to be the change that I want in the world. I want to see that change. I want to make the world a better place.
It's a lot of personal cost.
It's a lot of effort.
Do you think there's a personal cost to putting yourself out there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And for a long time.
Because you have a solid marriage. You've been married now for
almost 6 years.
6 years. You've been together for...
Oh, my God. I have to get
clear. Oh, how embarrassing.
How embarrassing. So we've only been together since 2011.
Let's go eight. I'm guessing eight.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
that sounds about right. Yeah.
So, you know, a substantial relationship.
Yeah.
How has that given you grounding to keep doing what you're doing in terms of social justice, your community, Hobson's Bay?
Yeah. Well, it's been awesome because, look, Munya does support me a lot in allowing me to do all that sort of stuff. When I say allowing me, because, I mean, I go away a fair bit with work as well, but also with a lot of the intersex advocacy that I do. And it's always awesome to be able to just come home, close the door, and then I'm in our space. I'm in home and I don't actually have to pretend to be anything or anyone, and I often do have to pretend to be someone when I'm working overseas or doing whatever.
Because your job fascinates me. You work in aviation.
Yes, I do.
How did you get into that?
Well, after HSC, was into engineering, so I started off doing civil engineering, ended up transferring into mechanical engineering. I then decided that I really like to do some motor mechanic stuff. So I was doing motor mechanics at trade school.
Reasonably masculine, traditionally masculine things. Yes. I don't think they are masculine, but
well, even in engineering, I was only one of two girls in my whole year level at university. I remember even the girls' toilets, we didn't have a girls' toilet in the engineering faculty. I had to go to a separate building to go to the toilets. God, I feel old when I say that, but it was only 31 years ago when I went to uni, started uni. So, yeah, and then I met a guy who was an aerospace engineer and we started talking about aircraft, and before you know it, I'm just absolutely fascinated with aircraft. And he said, oh, Ansett's, you know, applying, advertising for positions, and one thing led to another and suddenly I'm working at Ansett, and I'm absolutely loving that and just studying my backside off, and I had wonderful opportunities at Ansett. It was a hard struggle being one of the very few engineers at Ansett, but I persevered. I worked very hard at that. And then ANSAC collapse, moved into defence, working mainly for Air Force but also Army Aviation. Went to lots of places all over the country and you know, did work all over the place. Then worked for Federal Police, doing aviation audits overseas and in Australia. 5.5 years ago, started working for an aviation safety company, doing an audit organisation here.
So does that involve basically auditing the safety
and doing consulting and training for
airlines?
Yeah, airlines all over the world, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So you travel a lot?
I do travel a lot, yeah.
How does your intersex variation and your androgyny, let's go with androgyny,
because
I think you are androgynous to look at. I think I share that a little bit too. Yeah. I got misgendered a couple of days ago. It doesn't worry me at all. Couldn't care less. How does that affect your job?
It's
because you do live in, you do work in quite a masculine. And Middle East, you go to the Middle East a bit too, don't you?
I do go to the Middle East a bit.
How does that work?
Funny enough, the Middle East hasn't been as bad as places like Singapore, Russia. Russia was the worst, I have to say.
Why is that?
I was detained there, so not that long ago.
Because
coming
of your
into the country.
Gender? Or?
Because of my sex. A passport says sex, not gender.
Of course,
So no, that's okay, because a lot of people, even if you read a lot of the articles about Tasmania and stuff, it's, Russia. So I arrived in Russia. I did all the right stuff beforehand. Like, I got a visa, but I've got a... I used my Maltese passport at the time because to get a Russian visa, you have to give them your passport and they hold on to it for about a month. So I gave them my Maltese passport. I got a visa back and the visa didn't have a sex on it, which I didn't realise at the time, to be honest. I arrived in Moscow. Their first thing when they saw the visa was that it was a fraud. It was, I somehow, faked up a visa and... I didn't. So they go through with microscopes and with magnifying glasses and whatever. They put me to a side from everybody else. Then they're asking me, about sex. Do I have sex here and all that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, God. And I'm sure. And I've got my passport with the visa in it. And my passport says you. The visa says blank. And I'm like, well, this is what your consulate gave me. They couldn't speak English very well anyway. And... Well, I ended up speaking to one of their consulates and stuff on site as well. And, I think after an hour and a half, because I'm saying to them, well, what does it matter anyway? Finally, they actually let me through. It was a horrible experience. They were looking at me up and down, laughing at me actually as well, like I'm a freak. Just really reminds me of the Royal Children's Hospital, frankly. Yeah, but finally they let me through. I just went to the bathroom and started crying, basically. Afterwards, I didn't let them see. I was pretty cool, calm and collected during the process. But, it's taxing. It's taxing. As for my work, well, it depends on where I go. They would see me as either male or female, and I just wait for them to see what they want me to be, and I'll be that while I'm there. But I have to be careful, I think about when I visited Istanbul as an example. I go to the mosque, the beautiful Blue Mosque, amazing place. And so I make sure that, I put the headscarf on and all that sort of thing. I mean, imagine if I didn't and someone calls me out as being a woman without a headscarf, and if I'm arrested, searched, well, I'm not going to be... They're not going to think it's a man. So I always have to be very careful. Bathrooms, bathrooms are a bit of a pain. Changi Airport in Singapore, I remember arriving there, going to the bathroom, went to the female's bathroom. It's the one I prefer. But I had a woman screaming like a banshee about me being in the bathroom. And then on the way out, I had to go to the bathroom and I went to the men's toilets thinking, okay, well, I'll go to the men's toilets. That's where I want to go. I'm hearing people talking. It's like, there's a woman in the men's toilet. And I'm thinking, geez, I just want to have a... Yeah, it's just always weird.
Are you ever tempted to sit someone down and say, actually, this is what it is?
Well,
I'm neither. I'm actually both.
Well, I just happened to be, I must admit, I got sick of it one day at High Point.
Of all places.
I'm shopping with my mum. I go to the toilets. I'm in the toilets, the ladies' toilets. This woman says to me, this is the women's toilets. And I just said to her, would you like to see my vagina? And I just, she just left the bathroom. But I'm just, I get sick of it. I do get sick of it. But sometimes it has its benefits as well. Like, I've been at airports where I've gone to the women's toilets and they're so busy, I just think, okay, I'll go to the men's toilets, and I've just done that. And
so what does gender have to do with sexuality?
It just has to do, for me, it's just about, what gets with terms of sexuality. So what gets you off, what works, you know, what you have, what you don't have, you know, and how that works when, in terms of relating with somebody else.
So it's got nothing to do with intersex variation.
No, that's right. So, yes, sexual orientation has got nothing to do with intersex or gender. I mean, intersex people can be straight. Most intersex people are straight. Most intersex people are cisgendered. I'm cisgendered. So it's quite interesting when you see this, you know, stuff about the GLBTI community and talk about straight, you know, and it's like, well, some GLBTI people are straight. And some trans and intersex person, they're saying that some trans and intersex people are cisgendered because a lot of intersex people are cisgendered. So
you've really had to come out twice.
I've had to come out
sometime.
You come out lots of times, but pretty much with my family, I had to come out twice. So
yeah.
I came out as a lesbian when I was. It's funny, I never came out as a straight person. Why is that? Anyway, so I came out as a lesbian in my mid-20s. You know, it was shock, horror, whatever, to my parents, especially my mum.
What was their response?
Not a particularly good one, but...
Did you get a bit of, isn't your life hard enough?
Not yet. It was the intersex one that was like that. So the lesbian one was like that, but I had a typical, you know, dyke with a bike. So had a motorbike. I had a pretty bad motorbike accident when I was 27. Ended up in intensive care. My girlfriend at the time turns up, and it was only family only in the intensive care. And mum, who, you know, even though she was pretending to, well, sorry, she was struggling with me being a lesbian, she snuck my girlfriend in to see me. So that was pretty cool. I knew that, you know, she loves me. You know, she'll come around. But then when I was 30 and decided that I was going to do 60 Minutes and come out as an intersex person, I told my mum. Mum was like, can't you just be happy being a lesbian?
Because I guess you're sort of taking them along for the ride, aren't you?
Oh, I feel sorry.
I do. You know, it is your story, but it's not just your story.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's been hard for them, especially my mum. But, yeah, it's been difficult. I haven't always done the best things for them either. I know that I've been terrible and very challenging and whatever to my parents, maybe even my siblings. But thankfully they've always been there for me and they love me, and I love them.
So they're fully supportive now of your life and your marriage.
I hope so. Yeah, I think so.
Your family of dogs.
They love my kids, my dogs. They really do. I mean, they were so lovely with Nutmeg. So Nutmeg's our youngest, and she's a spoodle. She's a pure breed spoodle. Sorry, I've got people in the pure breed space. and she's gorgeous. She's and when she was a puppy, mum was gladly, you know, she happily did the whole daycare thing for Nutmeg when she was a puppy. It was gorgeous. And I just drop Nutmeg off there in the morning and pick her up in the afternoon. And Nutmeg was very happy because she was getting all sorts of chicken legs and pork chops and all sorts of things. She loves Nana.
Take me back to your parents. I want to chat to you about your parents in terms of their connections to the Maltese community and how it was for them once you made public that you had an intersex variation.
The first thing in the Maltese community, frankly, was their brothers and sisters, because this was such a big secret that they didn't know. They didn't know that I was any different. They didn't know all about the surgeries and
so
what we had gone through.
So just the immediate family knew, not the extended family.
Well, to be honest, even my twin sister, didn't know that I didn't have periods. She didn't know about the intersex variation. She knew that I was going to doctors for something, but my siblings didn't know.
How old was she when she found out?
30. She found out the day my immediate family, my brothers and sisters, only found out about it one day before the rest of Australia did. So 60 Minutes, and 60 Minutes were fantastic, actually. So Jeff McMullen was the journalist for that, and he was lovely. He was really lovely. He was lovely. So he gave us a copy of the program the day before so that I can show it to the family. So had the whole family come over, got some pizzas, and showed them the...
So you hadn't worded them up? You just said, I need to show you this.
Well, they
didn't
worded
wonder
up
why
my
you
sister,
were on 60 Minutes?
My sister was on it with me just for a few, like, shots, but she wasn't actually interviewed.
So they weren't thinking it was because you're elite athlete or
no.
You know, some sort of mysterious skill.
Although the elite athlete was funny. That reminds me of when 60 Minutes came out to Ansett to to filming at Ansett and the hangars and things, they wrote me a letter to give to my management, and in the letter it said they're interviewing me, you know, Antoinette and her remarkable life with AIS. And Ansett was the official Olympic airline.
Oh, the Australian Institute of Sport, of course.
But they were like, what do you have to do with the Australian Institute of Sport?
Can I say shot put?
I love shot put. I actually broke the boys' record in shot put, but let's not go there. It's a whole series of coming out, and you just, as you know, you just come out all the time. I was talking to someone in a local bakery this morning about it, because I asked you, like, what school did you go to? And I said, oh, Mount St. Joseph's, and whatever. You can see the look on their face, and, oh, well, it is what it is, and I'm not going to try and hide it or sugarcoat it.
Well, I guess it could have been a lot worse if you had an unsupportive family,
yeah.
A family that didn't understand.
Yeah, I've only got one sibling that's a Pentecostal. That's, you know, he's a Pentecostal. That's enough said.
I would have thought, though, that, you know, according to the Pentecostal religion, that you should be accepting of all of God's gifts.
Well, not only that, most religions do the whole, well, intersex people, God made us the way that we are.
Should be celebrating.
But, you know, that's not what they do. And, you know, I mean, even during the marriage equality debate, there were articles in the paper about, you know, living the intersex lifestyle, the intersex lifestyle. I'm like, well, who chooses the intersex lifestyle? Like, don't they know what it...
And what is it?
Well, I don't have an idea.
What is it on a day-to-day basis? What does an intersex lifestyle entail on a Monday?
I don't know, maybe... I really have no idea what the intersex lifestyle is, but I should make a book sometime.
In terms of your marriage, it was performed before it was legal here, so
yes.
It was done in New Zealand.
That's correct. So, yeah, so when I popped the question to my lovely, well, girlfriend at the time, and she said yes, thankfully, I wrote to the Attorney General to say, well, I've got a birth certificate that's blank and I don't have a sex, so who can I marry? Because, as you know, John Howard famously changed the... famously made the Marriage Act to be between a man and a woman to the exclusion of all others. And I've got a birth certificate that says that I'm not a man or a woman.
Here?
So it's literally to the exclusion of all others. So I wrote to the AG and said, well, who can I marry? And they just basically wrote back and said, well... Being intersex, I can just change my birth certificate correct my birth certificate to say that I'm male, and therefore I can marry Manya and we'll be...
So you got a choice.
Heterosexual. Well, I do, because I can prove that a choice is made and that I am biologically male and I'm biologically female. I can choose. But that would be really weird to be in a heterosexual marriage. But to be in a marriage as a heterosexual is just weird. And not to mention, they would have to say during our wedding ceremony, they'd have to remind everybody that the marriage is between a man and a woman. It's just weird.
I do know in your marriage vows that you said something about you promised to be the best husband and wife you could be.
Yeah, I did. So we got married in New Zealand. I wrote to the mayor of Dunedin because I couldn't get married in Hobsons Bay, obviously, in Australia. So the mayor of Dunedin let us get married in his in their council chambers, which was lovely. New Zealand, they introduced marriage equality, so that was all fine. And it was good. But when we came back, it was really weird getting on that plane, knowing that when we landed, we were no longer considered married in our own home.
We are now, though.
We are now. So as soon as marriage equality hit, came through in Australia, it automatically recognised our New Zealand marriage.
Did you have to fill in paperwork or just...
No, it just happened automatically. Yep, just as it would for straight people. So, yeah.
Just chatting to you, Tony, I'm baffled as to why we're not celebrating intersex.
I know.
It seems like a special thing, like something that's like an amazing thing.
It is, you know.
That we should be going, oh, wow, this person is both sexes. That is special and exciting.
Yeah, or a combination of both. I mean, most intersex people, like, you know, identify just... as women or men or whatever. You know, I recognise, you know, that I'm more female than male, but I am both, and I'm not ashamed, certainly not ashamed of it. I'm very accepting of it now. When I think about the discussions we've had within the GLBTI community over the years, things like, even things like marriage equality, but, you know, I just think... We people, and intersex people actually show that all that stuff, like same-sex marriage... It actually just, for intersex people, what does that mean? You know, so I think we actually transcend all of that sort of stuff and actually show even the conservatives out there, that it's just okay. It's okay to be different, and it's not black and white. It's all shade of rainbow.
Do you think the whole really strict binary thing of male and female and what that means is kind of falling by the wayside a bit?
Definitely. I definitely think so. And if we look at the amount of gender diverse people now, especially young people, that's only going to increase, I feel, in the future generations. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes.
What sort of future would you like to see in terms of gender?
Well, in terms of gender, I mean, I must like to see a genderless one, because I mean, I don't really understand the whole gender. I mean, I certainly respect trans people, but I can't imagine how it would feel to be. Well, I certainly can't imagine what it would feel to be just born one sex. And I certainly can't imagine what it would feel to be born one sex biologically, but have the gender identity of the other or another sex. I can't imagine
to
that.
Be torn and not
I really can't imagine that. In terms of all the sex and gender, I just wish it doesn't matter. I just wish it didn't matter, and that we're all just celebrated as people, and that we don't celebrate, oh, well, this baby, sex reveal. Oh, well, my child is going to have a penis. I mean, that's what a sex reveal is.
Yeah, the whole cutting of the cake and the...
You know, the whole cutting, like... But still, it is so important. I mean, I know that one of the very first questions that you ask when a friend has a baby is it a boy or a girl? And let's face it, to be lesbian even, you need to be with... It means being with a woman being with... To be a gay man, it's a man to be... So that whole categorisation thing really still exists even within our community. And I mean, bisexuals get the whole, haven't you made up your mind yet? Well, intersex people get that as well. Haven't you made up your mind yet? Why can't you just be? And it's like, well, this is just...
Pick one.
You know, yeah, pick... I get that all the time. Just pick one. You know, and even if, frankly, and even if I picked one, they they wouldn't be happy unless it's the one that they want to pick for me.
Because it's so rigid, isn't it? Like, we do live in a patriarchal world, but if you're born a cisgender male,
yeah,
there's a lot of stress and pressure to be a certain person.
Yeah.
And I think we might share the same views in that, you know, in future generations, we would like that to not be such a formidable expectation that if you're born with male genitals and you are biologically male, that you have to have all these other accoutrements that go with being male.
But I also wish even with women we're not as bad. I mean, women tend to criticise other women a lot. And even within our community, but butch dykes have a hard time as well, being even recognised as women, as lesbians, and there's so many butch dykes now, you know, transitioning, I guess, and being... It's okay to be a butch dyke, and you're still a woman, even if you look quite masculine.
Do you think it relates to the fear of other, like things that we don't understand? If they're not like us, they're other.
Yeah.
And they might be a bit scary.
Yep.
Maybe it's like a throwback to caveman days where I don't know what that is, so I better be scared of it because it might kill me.
Yep, there's definitely a lot of that as well.
We're an interesting species, aren't we?
We are, but, gee, it's nice. It's nice being interesting.
I think we're getting somewhere. I feel like we're getting somewhere in communities.
We've come a lot. We've come
a long
way.
I think we're a long way from not having, I've had a baby, it's a boy and a girl. I think we're a long way from that.
Yeah.
I think language has to catch up. You know, it's still awkward to say they.
They's really awkward.
It's very awkward. Yeah. I mean, it's awkward for me because it's unwrapping 54 years of grammar. You know,
it's also really confronting. You go to meetings these days and it's like, oh, what are your pronouns? It's like, oh, God, we're asking this again? Like, oh, God. Mm. I can understand why they're doing it, but it's pretty confronting. It's like, God, I'm going to have to pick. I mean, they're making you pick.
True. I never thought of it in terms of your life.
They're making you pick again.
Yeah, yet again, it's a
like it's
choice,
Jesus. Yeah. I mean, even, you know, because then you're making a choice about, you know, he, she, they, them, you know, all that stuff. It's like Tony? Like, but anyway, most of the time I just say, you know, depending on where I am, usually I'd say, you know, she, her, they, them, Tony, you know, whatever, but anyway.
So, Tony, what's next for you in the future? Are you still involved in local politics?
Yes, so this is my third term as a councillor, which I'm enjoying. So my term ends at the end of next year.
How do you cope with the inevitable pushback that comes from being in public life, no matter what your situation is, intersex or whatever, if you're just your standard person on the street? The sort of stuff I see on, say, Facebook pages for my local community, I just think, people need to take a chill pill. Like, the amount of aggression that is thrown at people that are trying to make a difference in public life.
Yeah, it is frustrating, but, you know, I often just tell people just how it is, like, and just try to explain to the situation. I know that, like, we've got one local issue about a kindergarten that the council wants to pull down, built, you know, knocked down, and I'm actually, and residents are up in arms about it because they want to, you know, restore it and whatever. And I'm like, guys, let's knock it over and build something even better. Like, I mean, why are we just thinking? So you just have to talk to people, I think. And
well, then, again, it's a fear of change, isn't it?
Fear
of something different.
Yeah, that's right.
Fear of something you don't understand.
Yeah, Hobson's Bay community is pretty good. Yeah, they don't ask for too much. And I think as a result of that, I want to give them as much as I can. Like, they're pretty cool.
So you're going to continue giving back in that way?
As much as I can, absolutely.
Intersex,
yeah, I love it.
The intersex community still work
yes,
there?
Yes, but it's not just intersex. I do a lot of work for the whole GLBT community as well. Well, I would say because people always know that I do the intersex, but they don't think of me as being anything else. they don't think about the L or anything else. So I do a lot of LGBT work as well. As I mean, I was actually the convener of Transgender Victoria at one stage because I didn't want that organisation to fold, so even though I wasn't trans, I put my hand up and became the convener. So, whatever.
You're a doer, aren't you?
I'd like to see
on your
get
locker
done.
When you're a teenager. I read this somewhere when I was stalking you. You had everyone else had pictures of Duran Duran or something, bras or something like that, and you had Martin Luther King.
I did.
JFK and the Dalai Lama.
Yep, and they're all male. I'm really sorry about that, but I did. I did.
Yeah, but they're significant people. They're not. I mean,
And I really,
I don't know, Duran Duran done anything amazing for?
No, but Girls on Film, film was pretty good.
Tony, I want to thank you for all your amazing contributions to the community, but just sharing, just being really honest with me, and just being really honest with everybody you meet. You know, you're such a fun person and you're so giving in everything you do, both for your own local community around Hobson's Bay, aviation, are lucky to have someone so smart and giving as well, LGBTIQ community, and just your mates and your family. We've all been blessed to know you.
To be
Thank
honest,
you.
It is an absolute honour having the passions that I do in my life of aviation, the LGBTI human rights stuff and local community stuff. And that I can do that is just absolute honour, absolute honour. I love it.
Well, I wish people could see your face because you've lit up. Yeah. Like you, I can tell when you say it's a privilege that you're not just.
I genuinely, you know, mean it. It's
blowing it out your ass. You actually believe that. So
I sometimes just think about how lucky I am to be in that place, and you know, to come. You know, as a teenager, there were difficult times, and look, I must admit, you know, I did think about, you know, self-harm and all that sort of stuff as a teenager, and I've gone from that to this, and people say to me, you know, go to places like Russia. I'm like, what are you doing going to places like Russia? And I'm like, well, I do not want being intersex to stop me from anything, and because of that, I just want to keep on pushing myself. So, but yeah, I'm very, very lucky. I've got an awesome wife, great family, wonderful fur kids, but, you know, wonderful son. I mean, I became a parent. I mean, who never thought that would happen when I was a child? Work in aviation all over the world, meet awesome GLBTI people and try and make a difference there. It's living the dream.
Well, thanks, mate. I really appreciate you coming in and
talking to know people like you for the last 20 years.
Well, it's been a privilege for me to know you over those years, but also to chat to you today. I've really loved it.
No, thank you. Thanks for
having
me.
And maybe take a break at some stage. I know you're really busy.
Yeah, we hopefully a road trip at the end of next year.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks.
Word for Word is presented and produced by Lisa Daniel, with production support by Chris Tate from Australia's LGBTI radio station, Joy. Word for Word is distributed nationally to over 70 stations across the community radio network.
If you're experiencing difficulty, please reach out for support. You can reach QLife, an anonymous and free LGBTI support service, by calling 1800 184 527 or call Lifeline 24 hours a day on 13 1114 for crisis support and suicide prevention. In an emergency, please call 000.
this morning, you're checking on me. You're restless, your pictures are speaking. The silence of nighttime doesn't love you like the rest of us. You're enraged, you're lonely. The clouds are dissolving above us. Insistence, there's meaning for the worst. You warn us with shrill voice. There's an eye behind the killers. They're in control, you're serious.